Hey, so, okay, hi everyone, and welcome to the
Woke Salaryman podcast.
Yes.
Today, Ray Ming will.
No, wait, undo it.
Okay, do it again.
Okay, let me think. Oh, yes, usually we do that, right? Yeah, okay. Hi everyone, welcome to the Woke Salaryman podcast. You know, today we're going to do something a bit different, from what we do. We're going to look through a survey done by OCBC.
This is not a sponsored content.
Yes.
We do sponsored content or other forms of content publishing things, but this one is not one of them. And we will tell you when
we will tell you. So please don't DM us saying like, hey, you do sponsored content. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. If it is, we will say.
We're already sharing out. Well, we have sold out already, but we will tell you when we sell out. And in this case, this is not a sell out yet.
We tell you when you sell.
We ain't selling nothing yet.
Yeah. Although this is sponsored by it's okay la, I mean.
So what is this? What is this thing?
So I'm going to say like some key findings from this year's OCBC.
But what is this? Okay. Like, they just do these surveys, is it for fun or?
I don't know why OCBC does this thing, but they try to get a pulse on how Singaporeans are doing when it comes to money.
Okay.
So they call it the OCBC Financial Wellness Index.
So right. Every year they come out with this.
Yeah, every year they come out with it. Actually, this year, the wellness score went down.
Meaning generally, it seems like Singapore, when it comes to financial wellness,
exactly, is going down. Because this year, right, they scored 61, okay? Last year, they scored 62.
Oh, went up by 1 point.
Yeah, so went up by one point. But I don't know, maybe 1 point is very big, right?
And then, so this is likely due to a combination of factors including inflationary pressures, rising interest rates, and market volatility.
Yes, you're reading off the article. Yeah,
I'm reading off the article.
So now they are back in 2020's level when you know they were dealing with the pandemic. So let's quickly just run through everything.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. First one. Close to half of Singaporeans say they don't have enough emergency funds to last 6 months in a crisis. This just means, you know, if they lose their job for 6 months,
they'll be in trouble.
Yeah, they'll be in trouble. My sense is that during the pandemic, we were all locked up at home. You cannot travel, you cannot go clubbing.
So we save a lot.
So what people do, they start to save money, they start to care a lot about their finances.
Yep.
Maybe they follow Woke Salaryman sometimes.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes.
Thank you.
Yeah. If we're lucky.
Yeah. I think after the pandemic,
let's go.
A whole bunch of stuff happened.
Travel unlock.
Travel unlock and like
supply line coming back already. Yeah. You know,
So, and then like the government aids stopped coming in. So, all of a sudden, you know, all the things that made you save money, all the temptations are all back.
Right.
And I think like this is a big reason on why people don't have emergency funds to last 6 months in a crisis.
Do you have enough emergency funds to last 6 months?
I keep around 2 years cash.
Oh, then big flex, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you ask me, I just say. Yeah. Right. You ask me,
yeah, I set you up, to be able to big flex.
You cannot ask me, then you say big flex.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. I was fucked up.
So, I mean, I've seen people who straight away after the pandemic open, they go on
sprees, like travel sprees.
Travel sprees, yeah. Right. Spend a lot of money, go concerts.
Mm,
But they are relying on their emergency funds to do it.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. Actually, even during... do you remember we have an FWD collab?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the questions asked a few times was like, is it okay to go on... to take on debt to go on holiday.
Oh, yo.
But I wasn't
there. You're like, oi, this one.
I was like, stop. You wake up your idea.
Yeah, how dare you even say that?
Yeah. That makes me think like, maybe many people didn't even classify emergency funds as just emergency funds. They just classify it as money in the bank.
And oh, they don't ascribe a purpose to it. Exactly. It's just, I got this cushion.
Yeah. No, I just got this cash the government gave me. I had nothing to spend on.
Yeah.
Then now I spend it.
I just spend it.
Then now, don't have enough emergency funds to last 6 months in a crisis.
I think a lot of people don't have it also because they don't like, for example, like you said, like ascribe a purpose for it. So I think like what made it very clear for me was when I first started my financial journey, then I was asking about investing. And he said, hey, before you invest, just make sure you have 6 months of your either monthly expenditure or salary. So I chose salary to be safer, right? And that has kept me very safe because it just told me, this is the amount and here's why.
Yeah.
And that was very clear. So I think if people don't think about it like that, I just see it as, like you say, money in the bank, then I just spend, right?
Mm.
But yeah, this is very dangerous, I think, especially in this uncertain time. You don't know what next year is going to be like, so you might need actually some cash, you know? Yeah.
Big yikes. Okay.
Mm.
Ready, next one?
Yeah, let's go next one.
About 45% say they do not have enough funds to meet family needs for the next year.
So this means like next year, the full year of next year, to put it aside. I don't know if
I don't know whether we're over like analyzing it.
What is it analyzing?
I don't know, it's just funny.
Okay. I feel like this one, I don't know how to call it, because I don't have family like in that picture there where there are many smaller things.
Yeah.
It's just me, my wife and two hamsters for now.
Nice. So yeah. I think I am guessing it is the funds that they have is not enough to meet family needs for next year. So they probably have to work to supplement those needs. The income coming in.
But you're working anyway, right?
But they do not have enough funds to meet family needs. The people say they do not have enough funds to meet family. So funds are like money in the bank.
Oh, right. I see. No way, actually, I don't get it.
Ah! Okay.
I don't get it.
Let's say this thing was called 45% struggle to make ends meet.
Yeah.
That one is like, it's very big.
That means the income coming in not enough.
Not enough. So this one only takes into account the current funds. Yeah.
So money in the bank.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Another factor that we didn't say is because inflation also happened.
Yeah, so what is next year's price?
Yeah, so things have become more expensive also. So that could be a reason also.
Yeah.
During COVID, we also saw some careers earn a lot of money. Some careers earn very little money. Some jobs earn very little money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that...
There's a lot of volatility. Yeah.
Some of this 45% comes from the group that did not earn... That the incomes were hit.
Right. Like if you're a pilot or, you know, F&B, that kind of, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, next one?
Yep, next one.
Okay. Mired by mortgages,
wow.
2 in 5 Singaporeans face difficulty paying their mortgages, the highest percentage since the index was launched in 2019.
2 in 5 is a lot.
This figure is up 9 percentage points from 2021. Okay, how do you feel about this?
Well, that feels like a lot. I mean, I'm not a financial person. I don't keep up with these things. But it feels like a lot because 2 in 5 is, what, 40%? Right.
Yeah, it is.
That means, yeah, so I have heard a lot of my friends talk about this actually, and I was quite surprised because I generally think, I mean, the mortgage, your housing loan is generally speaking a good one because it's real estate, and the rate is good. It's like, you know, 2-3%-ish, I don't know, with some flex, but nowadays going higher, right?
Yeah.
So, but still, you know, it's versus your other kind of loans or percentage rate is a good one to have.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of friends actually, like multiple friends telling me, hey, actually, should I sell my house, downgrade to a smaller one, or like pay off all my loans right now so that I don't have to pay so much mortgage or pay so much interest in mortgage? And that is a very, it surprised me that this year, because we've had this thing for 3 years already, only recently I start hearing this like a lot of the time. Do you have any experiences in that regard?
So actually, okay, I don't have any experience
in terms of talking to people, because Ring talks to people on IG a lot, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of people have been asking this question.
Yeah.
But I think it's, and I think I got a rough explanation on why this might have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Interest rates are the highest since... A long time ago. Mm. And people of our generation have not seen interest rates like that. As a result, you know, people did not plan their mortgage in mind with such high interest rates.
Mm. Yep.
Do you remember, I think we did this in previous podcasts, we talked about the 3-3-5 rule. Don't buy the house unless you save 30% of it.
Mm.
Should not take up
30% of your income every month.
Yep, and 5 times your annual income.
Yep.
Yep. So I think many people say it was very conservative.
I was like, forget it, the interest rate is so good. Fuck this 3-3-5 thing, right?
But I guess this is why, you know, the 3-3-5 rule... Why the financial savvy people follow it.
Rocketed back into relevance, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
The other thing is that I think during COVID, there was quite a lot of people who have a lot of cash, right? And because interest rates were low, that led them to...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You know, people are saving more than usual. They had a lot more money.
Interest rates were good.
It was easier to buy a house slightly beyond their means.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And then now when interest rates go up, things started to be affected.
Wow, it's troubling. Right.
It is... It is troubling. Okay, next one.
Yes,
next it says one. Derailed, decide to retire. More have started on their retirement plans this year, but fewer people are on track to achieve their goals. So 68% of Singaporeans have started making retirement plans.
Up 2%.
Yeah. 32% of Singaporeans have not started making retirement plans. And then among people who started, 42% are on track. 58% are not on track with their retirement plans.
Oh, the on track has fallen by a lot.
Yeah.
Right, like, and I think it is quite natural also, right? Because the financial factors that you're working, like the regular interest rate that you're used to has changed by so much.
Mm.
Then your projection, if you compound, will be a lot, right?
Yeah. I'm willing to guess also a large part of it because of your investments.
So because the market tank.
Yeah. For example, last year when the stock market was doing very good,
yeah,
crypto was doing amazing.
Yeah.
I was drifting in and out of financial independence.
Mm,
right. Super on track.
Like yeah, that line is it. Yeah.
And I feel like many people were like that also.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but this year I think crypto was destroyed, right? Took a huge hit.
Yeah.
Stock market
still getting hit, yeah.
Also quite down, I think up to 20% down at some
stocks,
point this year.
The tech stocks all gonna beat.
Yeah, so a lot of the popular stocks people were harping during last year, like
your Fang, you know,
Fang stocks, yeah. C Limited, CrowdStrike, even Tesla. I feel like these stocks took a large hit. And what I feel like might be also be possible is that some people started last year, put the cash into a lot of these stocks or the stock market, invested on a high, and then like they would have been affected. Their retirement plans could have been affected as well. Okay, why is this happening? So actually, they provide a rationale from that side. Quick gains, future pain. While the majority of Singaporeans save at least 10% of their income, what they are saving for has changed. So this is a comparison with 2021 and 2022. Let's see. They start saving more for travel. Oh, travel, that's what I said just now, right? And then
travel has overtaken investments as a reason for people to save.
Yes. Yeah. And investment is kind of linked to retire because it will contribute to your retirement funds. Mm.
So travel is the only one that sort of went up. Everything else
went down
from last year.
So I think I also get it because you live in Singapore and I love Singapore. It's a very beautiful country. A lot of things to do.
There's not that many things in terms of variety, sights to see.
Yeah, you can only go to, you know, recently they have a new Rifle Range trail. I mean, it's nice the first 5 times.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you... What?
I think I just laugh because it's true. Yeah. I can think of some other things like the...
Yeah.
The Changi Jurassic Mall, you know. I went one time and like,
then like the remaining 20 times would be too much already.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why... It's not Singapore's fault, you know. It's
It's just what it is.
There's just not enough variety in terms of geology because it's just not big enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's why they travel.
I mean, you yourself probably reflect this. So how many times you travel like in the past few months? Many times, right?
I travel six trips since August, I think.
Yeah. So you also, I think, reflect this kind of thing. It's just that you, of course, don't dip into your
emergency funds.
I'll go into debt to do it. Like, don't do that, guys, please.
Yes, don't do it. Please don't do it. I must stress again. Yeah. Okay, next one.
Yeah, next one.
They say, more stress, less cash. Undesirable habits are also on the rise. Almost half of Singaporeans reported gambling more than they can afford to lose, up 5 percentage points in 2021.
Wow, 5 percentage points.
What I want to know is that the OCBC classify crypto as gambling? Or is it just regular gambling?
Do you classify crypto as gambling?
No, I classify it as a very speculative investment. I haven't even thought of them as in investments. So yeah, maybe gambling.
I would think NFTs at the very least is very confirmed gambling for me, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's shocking. That's a half.
Yeah. 1 in 3 credit card holders say they often pay only the minimum sum, an increase of 7 percentage points last year. This is quite terrifying. 34%.
Wait, what does minimum sum mean? Not that means you'll be penalized, right? This means you'll be penalized.
Yeah. So I think minimum sum is like $50 or $100 only, right?
That's... Yeah, because I did it one time. Because I thought minimum sum means...
Like a CPF thing.
No, it means I pay that, right? Then the rest, I will not be charged interest. Then they park me one time. I'm like, what the... Oh, that's not what it means.
Yes.
After that, I never ever did it again.
Yeah.
Like, unless I forgot.
Yeah.
It's shocking to me that 34% is...
Yeah, because you let this roll on for a few months, I mean, one third of credit card holders can be in trouble.
Yep. My goodness.
I've heard of people who have up to like 20K credit card debt.
How do they even think about when eventually this will finish?
I think...
What is the psychology there?
I think the psychology is that you're very stressed.
Yeah, yeah.
You spend as a way to escape reality. To de-stress,
right.
Then, at the same time, maybe you don't earn a lot of money, right?
Mm.
So you spend, and then like, this credit card thing is a nasty thing you have to confront at the end of every month. And you don't have enough to pay the full thing, so you pay only the minimum sum.
Oh.
So it continues to snowball.
That's scary, man.
Yeah, I mean... No judgment, although...
Yeah, it's a really rough...
No judgment from a moral standpoint.
Yeah.
But from a financial standpoint, it's not good at all.
It's really... It will not turn out well. It's a bit like hoarding, actually. It reminds me of hoarding. Like, you just snowball the things, but you don't have the fortitude to one time just clear everything.
Yeah.
So you just clear the amount that it takes for you to walk through the house. Then your house just... It's very similar in terms of mentality, in my opinion. Oh, that is shocking. That 1 in 3, eh.
Yeah. I think to some people...
Credit card holders, lah.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not like on the street, 1 in 3 person is...
Well, I'll be shocked. Yeah. Like what, you meet your nephew, like... Hey, but boy, hey, you never pay your credit card bill, is it?
Yeah.
No.
This also reminds me of... And maybe I shouldn't say it now. I'll say it in a bit. Yeah. I was going to say buy now, pay later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But we move on to the next one first.
34% of investors... up 6 percentage points from 2021, say they excessively speculate for quick gains.
Oh, this one I'm not surprised. I expected it to be higher.
Actually, I'm curious because wouldn't you excessively speculate from quick gains last year in 2021?
Yeah.
Why do it this year in a bear market?
They got some money left, so like fuck it, let's finish it.
Okay. You know? It might be that maybe they lost a lot of money already. Yeah. Like, I'm going to put this all, it will recover.
Yeah, yeah. But this is a subjective thing also. They are asking people what they consider excessively speculative. So these are people taking themselves and say, actually, excessively speculative.
There might be people who are excessively speculating, but they don't consider themselves as such.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
I remember...
That's a great point. Yeah.
I remember last year... There were people who said something like, "Oh, so I put
a blue chip lah, you know?
put in the blue chips of crypto."
Yeah, yeah.
Where blue chips of crypto, yes, there are Luna, cryptos which are more established and blue chip.
Yeah.
But they're not blue chip in the broader financial space.
Yeah. So and how you indicate your whether you excessively speculate is not whether you dip in or not a lot of times, it's how much you go in for, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that you go in doesn't mean I'm excessively speculating if it's just a small percentage of my portfolio.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. 1 in 5 Singaporeans are spending beyond their means to keep up with their peers. This figure was 15% in 2021.
Wow.
Well, this one I feel is not shocking. It doesn't come as a surprise because I know like...
Really?
Singaporeans are very competitive people. Like, for example, when we write, I say 100K by 30, there'll be someone who say, oh, you know, so what? You know, I
say 200K.
Yeah, by this time, I already had 300K by 30. This is small money.
Right.
So, just in the financial blogger space, there are people trying to outdo each other.
I
can imagine, like, this same competitiveness taken to lifestyle will be very costly.
Oh, that's scary also. I always just come across as I'm okay with being the giam siap person in the group that says it is very expensive, let's not do that, or like I don't need to go to this thing or to wear this kind of thing to impress people. So it's hard to relate for me, but it's quite scary to me lah. Especially it went up like 7 percentage points there. And this is Singaporeans as a whole.
Yeah.
They feel, and this is also a subjective one, because there is no objective quota of oh you spend this one means you are doing this. They feel that they are actually spending beyond their means, you know, to keep up with their peers. What makes it very difficult to relate for me is that second part, keep up with their peers. Like, I don't even think that's worth anything, let alone spending beyond your means, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I hope I don't come across like that. I just can't relate to it. But
I think social media makes it hard.
That's true. Yeah.
For people to not compare.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, for example, you see your friend go Bali, then they tell someone, hey, you should also go Bali.
Hmm.
then you think that like this person and I are like roughly the same age, right? We should be able to afford to go also.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I qualify a bit also. It's not actually I can relate to the idea of trying to compete, but I just don't do it via spending, you know? I might do it via my work or my output or things like that. So I'm not immune to this kind of insecurity lah.
Mm.
Right? But to do it via spending, it's very, very difficult for me to it's very scary. 1 in 5. Damn.
I think this sounds very weird, but recently because like after achieving financial independence, like there was a while like I said like, oh, you know, I will spend like a normal person. So I spend like a larger proportion of my money. But after hanging out with like a few friends this year, I kind of inspired to intentionally lead a simple life. Like you do remember Thomas Chua? He was on our podcast.
Of course.
I mean, the guy also spends very little every month. He just spends it like fitness, bicycle. He only had one bicycle. Like. He never buy a lot. Yeah, and then he just plays sports. I visited my friend in Japan who, on days that he didn't feel like spending money, because he lives in the village, he would just crack open an egg on top of very hot rice.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
And that would be his meal.
Right.
And that is something that
you
can cook at home.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a good idea for like a... Because I don't like cooking.
Quick meal,
but yeah, I get it. It's fast, it's easy, does the job, done.
Yeah. So like... It's weird, but I chose like a different set of peers to kind of to emulate, even though not perfectly so. I feel like who you select as people who think are like you will affect this a lot. Okay,
yeah, let's go to the next one.
Next session. Whose investments were most impacted? Young people, Gen Z, millennials were hit the hardest as they invested in the most traditional,
non-traditional
high-risk products like cryptocurrency. Yeah. Just 1 in 3 of those in their 20s are on track with their investment goals. If I may be the optimist in the room.
Yes, I mean, be the optimist in the room. I'm the pessimist, he's the optimist.
Remember like, we always say like, don't invest money, you can't afford to lose because it'll be up and down in the long term.
Yeah.
This could be one of the downs. Of course, some of the downs will not be rising back up again because they're gone forever.
Yep.
Right. But if you want to invest in risky stuff, especially stuff like growth stocks.
This is part of
This is life. Part of it. Yeah, yeah, this is part of it.
Yeah.
And if it helps, you have, compared to older generations, a longer period to recover from this.
Yeah,
I think many times you see memes where like, oh, I'm never going to financially recover from this.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah, but if you are young enough and you...
You work on earning power, get a job.
If your investments are not negative...
Yeah. Unless you borrow money.
Also,
if you want to borrow a lot of money, you will need to have a lot of money in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So, probably okay on it, right?
You'll be okay. I mean, it definitely will feel like the end of the world for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But you just have to... continue the grind.
Yeah, the phoenix will rise again from the ashes.
You remember like in May after I lost quite a bit of money on Luna?
Yeah.
I went into hustle mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, eventually...
Yeah, but you're hurrying for the work salary, man, right? You special powers, man.
Eventually...
100K by 30, man. Yeah, sorry. Eventually, yeah.
Eventually, you will crawl off if you work on your...
Earning power. Right, right. Yeah. So you're okay now, right?
Yeah, financial independence again.
Yeah.
Okay. More baby boomers are speculating excessively to close their retirement gap.
Close their retirement gap? What does that mean?
Okay, so let's say you want to retire here. Now you're here only. Then they want to close the gap.
Okay.
So they invest speculative. More baby boomer investors are speculating excessively in an attempt to close their retirement gap.
So it's like here, my trajectory like that. So I need to suddenly...
Do you remember the comment you did about Get Rich Quick?
Yeah.
They're trying to rocket ship up there.
Yes. But the rocket ship dangerous.
I think this is a terrible mindset to have.
Can I guess why?
Okay.
Is it because they're older so that their earning power is already trajectoring downwards? So this is not a good thing for them to try to do.
Not really.
Okay, I lost.
You didn't lose anything. No,
yeah.
Don't say that. It's because when you're older, you do not have as fast an investment horizon as compared to young people.
Okay.
Your risk appetite might not be as much, very likely not be as much.
Right. So the time you have to hold through a down period is not that long because you're old already.
Exactly. Mm. So let's say I'm 20, right? I can hold my down investments.
Yes, yes.
30 years.
Yes.
Okay, right?
If I'm 55, I'm going to be 85. Yeah. I have no life left to spend it.
Yeah. And here's the thing. The more speculative your investments get, right, the closer they get to scams. Downright scams.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people will tell you like, oh, there's this great investment opportunity in your lifetime. That is beyond like the crypto, that's beyond like the Bitcoin world. It enter like the shitcoin world.
Yeah.
And older people got their own version of their
shitcoins. Like Blackstone now, whatever. I drink this thing, you know, you can't do it.
Or like, a penny stock.
Charms, or penny stock.
Or like,
I'm thinking superstitious.
No. You know, on Telegram, they will they will add you to this trading group.
Right.
Like pump and dump schemes.
Oh, that's what all the YouTube comments are. They say, I'd like to thank this Mr. Wawa for this stock recommendation. Yes. So it's all this kind of thing.
Yes.
So it's like it does exist
on
the market. It's just that they have some reason behind it. They want to pump and dump it.
Yes.
So they want you to fucking pump it so that they can fucking dump it and then you're left with this shit.
Yes.
Right. I see.
Also, baby boomers have more to lose compared to young millennials. And
because they got money.
Yeah.
They got money to cheat.
Yeah. And if you combine like lack of knowledge with desire to close the gap quickly, you'll be cheated very, 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 very easily.
Yeah. So, okay, then in this case, if I'm a baby boomer, I have this gap here that I cannot cross. My trajectory is just not going fast enough to meet this.
Yeah.
What should I do? Is it to lower my
Well, it's very harsh to say, but you either lower the amount you need for retirement.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the borders are open again. You can have a decent life in Southeast Asia.
Ah, I see what I mean. Yeah. So go overseas where
your dollar can go further.
It stretch further.
Places like Bali are starting open.
Yeah.
Opening visas, you know, where you can live there for an extended period of time.
Mm.
Thailand also.
Yeah, I think these kind of, there are these places opening up
to
basically receive people from
more
prosperous countries. Yeah. So it's the other one to work longer.
Yeah, it is. Oh. No, but honestly, I was going to say, like, if you have no money retired in Singapore, like, there's really no shame.
No shame.
Singapore is a damn expensive place.
It is, yeah.
Like, if I not have money, even if I had the money, retiring in Bali would be awesome.
But I don't know how.
Let's say
you think about face, you think about all these things, you know.
Okay, like if you can let go of the face.
So let go of the face. That's the advice.
Yeah, I guess.
Right.
The second option is to work longer.
Extend your retirement goal. Right?
Yeah.
Wow, very harsh to hear, though. Right.
I mean, it's not something that government can say, but I feel as a privately owned business.
Let's say it.
We just say, I mean, don't want to sugarcoat also, right?
Bitter medicine. Yeah.
But you know why a lot of old people are working longer, right?
Why?
Because they're also living longer.
Yes. And they're able to be healthy enough to work for longer.
Yeah. And also, if old people cannot support themselves, what happens is the government will have to tax young people even more.
So you will pay for them.
Yeah. So in me saying, extend the amount of time you work. It's a bit in my own self-interest.
Right.
Or in young people's self-interest.
Yeah.
But someone's got to pay.
Someone's
got to pay.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, very sobering. Oh. Next one.
Savvy investors who seek professional advice outperform those who don't.
So what do you think of this idea of like those who use financial advice?
Well, I think skeptical people will say, this OCBC, of course they will say that.
Yeah, but I mean, if you sponsor the thing, you also...
Of course. Makes sense.
Comic.
Yeah. This might not be that much of a big of a surprise.
Yeah.
What I think the people who do not use advice from financial institutions, in my head, right, they're the kind of people that try to do very special, unconventional things mm-hmm. to kind of like do better than everyone else. Yeah. You know, why follow this boring financial institution okay. stuff?
Yep.
Just do this one simple trick, right?
Yeah.
And then you will be richest,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Then you go do like options. You go, in Chinese there's this saying called like 化蛇添足.
Yes.
You go do extra thing.
Draw snake.
Draw legs on snake.
Draw snake at licks, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in the, there's this term called accredited investors.
Yes, in the US, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of people think to be accredited investor means like, wow, this guy very, some very, big very tight, yeah, right? Yeah. Actually, what it means is that the government believes that you are so rich, right? Mm. That you get to dabble in stupid shit that we cannot
yeah.
regulate.
Yeah. You know right, what I mean? Right. It's like, yeah, he can handle it. Maybe he's dumb. Doesn't mean he's not dumb.
Yeah.
But he can tank it, so let him do la.
Yeah.
Right. It's not a accreditation of smartness or yes. lack of dumbness. La,
exactly.
Right?
So sometimes simple, normal financial advice is very, oh my God, I can bring out my story about my dad. Yeah. No, not my dad. The
simple is hard.
Yeah. Okay, so I got an anecdote to share. So recently I went back to my secondary school to give a career talk. Then I met my secondary school math teacher. Mm. Right? I was 14 when we last met. I'm 33 now, so obviously some time has passed.
Mm.
And a lot of world events have happened.
Right.
He asked me, hey, Riming, the stock market is not doing good, you know. You know, I invested last year. Mm. Everything is so low.
Mm.
How to get out of it?
Mm.
So I just said all the good financial advice that we often give, you know.
The like, same old shit that we always say.
Yeah,
right?
Same old shit, yeah. You know, you can try to earn more money, you know, can get a promotion, stay invested eventually.
Don't spend more than you make. Yeah. Da, 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 da.
Then he just cut me off halfway.
It's like, yeah, boring.
Yeah, and I was like, I already know all this already. Tell me, what is the trick? So.
What the trick?
Yeah. So I think many people are still wired this way, that they're looking for a trick.
Or hack, or formula,
yeah.
or one thing. You know?
Yeah, but it's not. It's about doing the small things consistently that allow you to build up. Not even legendary names, just like how ordinary people build wealth.
Mm-hmm.
How most people become millionaires
right.
or multi-millionaires.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Yeah.
And you let it compound over like with time.
Yep.
So, if I have advice for people who feel very hit after following a lot of unconventional advice, like smart aleck kind of advice, very contrarian stuff that you read online, it is that sometimes the best advice is simple, but we also recognize that simple is not easy.
Yeah.
It's tell you all these things very simple to do, but we recognize it's not easy to follow through with it.
Yeah, a lot of times it seems like all these like one trick, one hack kind of thing is all about like you're trying to externalize the problem to solve. But actually, a lot of times, the problem to solve that actually works is internally to build up that fortitude or that ability to resist market up and down and market noise, you know, and just stay with it, just stay the course, you know. Yeah. So pertaining back to this, like, how do you feel it reflects? Is this like in the 51% of people or what? Like, or not 51% of people, 51 score, like a lower index score? You feel like this is being pulled down because the people that do not use advice from financial institutions, which is actually quite standard, are the ones that are playing a lot of tricky things, and that's why they will tend to score a bit less in this whole
thing. Yeah, that's what I believe.
Right.
Even though there are some advice from financial institutions we don't necessarily endorse.
Yeah, but and probably I say like, the other way also, we say some things that they might not.
I think overall it's like, you know, like orangutan and a human being, 99.9999% DNA match.
Mm.
It's just that they choose to do it another way. Like, you know, some people choose to live in the forest. Some people live in civilization. I don't know where I'm going with this.
So is the orangutan the 62 or the 51?
No. This is talking about our overlap with financial institutions.
Ah, okay.
And in this scenario, I would prefer to be the orangutan.
Also, we are the orangutan.
Yeah.
Right. But orangutans dying.
Yes, they are. But they are so big and majestic and gentle.
Yeah, no, but majestic and gentle doesn't feed you or your family, right?
Yeah, in fact.
I don't know, unless you're in the Singapore Zoo. Then can.
Yes.
So
yes,
in Singapore,
yes.
Orangutans can sort of thrive. But they're appreciated nonetheless.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay, that was a bad analogy. I just want to say there's a lot of overlap between what we say and what the financial institutions say.
Yes. 99.99% DNA match.
like an orangutan and a human being. Okay. But what I'm trying to say is that
got a lot of overlap la, between us and
the banks. Yeah, and many people are very skeptical of financial institutions, but they are generally give good advice. Generally, 99.9999% like an orangutan and a human being.
Yeah, lives your average investment index score by 9.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Oh, I know why I say we are. I know why we're orangutans already instead of human beings.
Why?
Because we are not like completely profit driven, right?
Ah, right. Yeah, a bit clunky.
Yeah, it's about having a soul and lots of fur.
Right.
Swinging around the trees.
In the Mandai reserves.
Yes, but also the island of Borneo where they first resided.
Right.
Well, I think we should probably end it.
Yeah, so thanks very much for watching this podcast. I hope this is not our last one, but in case we sort of trend downwards like the orangutan.
Yeah. You know, orangutan damn strong. They are stronger physically than... Physically.
But I mean like, species-wise, they're on the decline, right?
Yeah, but they're very strong. Like, do you know a chimpanzee can rip off your face?
Yes, I heard that there was like some reports of people getting mauled by a chimpanzee, and it's freaking brutal. And like they tear your limbs and and rip off your genitals and stuff.
Okay,
true story.
Okay.
I can show you later.
I do not want to see this.
I'll show you later. I'll sneak it. I'll show you next week. When you forget about it, like, look at this. It's very interesting investment advice. And you'll be like, oh, chimpanzee mauls too, and you know, rip off genitals and limbs.
In case.
We get ripped, like we get destroyed by chimpanzees. Yeah. Like you cycling halfway,
chimpanzee
lands on you.
Surprise, bitch!
Yeah, rip off your limb, steals your bike.
Yeah,
pedals away. You know, it's been very nice to do this podcast and this YouTube thing and this Spotify or whatever thing.
Yes.
Thanks very much for listening. It's been a great run.
Great fun. Yeah. All the best. Stay away from chimpanzees.
Yes.